United States Steel Corporation, 500,000 employees and stockholders, presents The Theater Guild on the Air, starring Martha Scott, Aline McMahon, in Storm Over Patsy. United States Steel Corporation is happy to bring you the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost producers of great plays in the theater. Tonight's play is Storm Over Patsy by James Bridey, adapted from a play by Bruno Frank, featured with Martha Scott and Aline McMahon are Richard Widmark, Philip Tong, and Alfred Shirley. And here is Lawrence Langner, co-administrator with Teresa Helburn of the Theater Guild, to tell you something about the play and its players. Mr. Langner.
Thank you, Norman. Ladies and gentlemen, you all know the slogan, love me, love my dog. That ancient saying might well have inspired the author, James Bridey, to write our play for tonight, Storm Over Patsy. With Election Day so very near, Storm Over Patsy has a topical interest. Next Tuesday, many of you voters will be going to the polls. To all candidates everywhere who await Tuesday's verdict of the voters, let me give this word of warning. Don't by any chance in the next few hours be so rash as to kidnap a dog from an argumentative widow. As our listeners will shortly learn, it was a Scots mayor. In Scotland, a mayor is called a provost, who was foolish enough to seize the mongrel of the widow Flanagan, a mutt called Patsy, because of unpaid dog taxes. What happens after this is not only funny, but goes considerably deeper. Tonight's stars will be Martha Scott, now starring in the Broadway success, The Voice of the Turtle. In our play, she plays the part of Victoria. Also, Aline McMahon, who plays the widow Flanagan. Dick Widmark is the young reporter. Philip Tong, the imprudent provost, and Alfred Shirley is the town clerk, McKellar. Who will play the part of the dog, Patsy? I can only tell you that he's better behaved than the Patsy who drove us out of our wits when we produced this play on the stage.
And now the curtain rises on the Theater Guild production of Storm Over Patsy, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
It happened back in September, the scandalous affair of the Patsy did. I mind the time distinctly because there's no prettier town in all Scotland than Ardbeakie when the leaves get to turning. I mind how red they looked in Beakie Square that day, and how the ivy on the town hall fair shone like copper in the sun when the provost sent me to take Honoria Flanagan's dog, Patsy. Well, you'll hear more about the provost later, but I'll tell you now. To be in progress of Beakie means you have to govern Beakie just as careful as the Lord Mayor governs London. And if we'd known when we elected Provost Thompson that the day was coming when he... Oh, there I go getting ahead of myself. Well, as I was saying, the storm over Patsy rightly started when I hurried from Town Hall down to Beakie Square, where Honoria Flanagan sold apples. And right next to her apple stand, barking, tempting, furious, when I tried to pick him up, was the Patsy.
Down me, Patsy, James McKellar.
And now then, Honoria, I've got orders to confiscate your dog, and I'll trouble you to hand him over nice and quiet.
Hand him over, I will not. Patsy's mine.
Now, Honoria, the provost in the town council, see, I'm to take the wee dog from you, seeing you haven't paid the tax on him. I've got to confiscate
him. Confiscate, is it? Don't you be using them high-sounding words to me, James McKellar. It's even you're after. Taken away a poor woman's dog that never done harm to nobody. Oh, did you, Patsy, me darling?
Honoria, no can keep the wee man till you pay the £3.3 back taxes on him. It's the law, woman. No, I'll just be taking the dog along.
Get away from me, Patsy, you big armored gum. But tell me, Patsy, do you hear me?
No, Honoria, I'm only doing my duty as town clerk. the law,
oh,
the
but
law.
They're going to kill him. They're going to kill him for the tax money. And we love him, Patsy, that's never done harm to nobody.
Oh, no. The wee thing's no dead yet. If you was to come down to the town hall with me and see the police commissioner...
That I will. And if he don't be giving me back me Patsy, I'll go to the provost himself.
You'll no be bothering the provost. And him busy with going to be elected to Parliament and making all those campaign speeches. You'll get yourself in trouble now, you will.
Trouble? They're taking me, Patsy. And it's nothing but trouble they'll have till I get him back.
Well, that was the start of it. Over across the square is a fine house where the provost lived. An old house with a grand porch and great windows like doors opening onto it. If you'd been in the neighborhood that afternoon, you'd have seen a very pretty lass run up onto the porch and ring the provost's doorbell.
Oh, good afternoon, Miss Victoria.
Hello, Maggie. Is the provost in?
Not yet, ma'am. He's a bit late from the council meeting, but I know he's expecting
me. Mrs. Skirving and I promised him we'd take turns being his hostess during the campaign. I'll wait in the drawing room.
Begging your pardon, miss. There's a man waiting in there for him.
Gentleman?
Well, I suppose it's free and easy for a gentleman, ma'am. He asked for his tea, like this was his house and not the provost. Oh, he's a queer one. You'd best be careful.
Thank you, Maggie. If he bites me, I'll scream and you can come and rescue me. Good afternoon.
Oh, hello. I came to see Provost Thompson.
I expect him any moment.
Are you Mrs. Thompson?
Victoria Hart, Mrs. Thompson, to be. I'm a volunteer hostess for him during the campaign.
Oh, I'm Frank Burden from the Advertiser. I'm to interview the provost.
Oh, the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
How nice. Mr. Skirving and his wife are great friends of mine. I said your editor and his wife are great friends of mine.
Oh, excuse me. I don't stare as a rule. But then there's been nothing to stare at in Baky till now.
You're new in Baky, too?
Yes, I met Mr. Skirving in London, and he offered me a job.
I come from farther away than that, all the way from Canada.
You do?
Mr. Thompson and I became engaged, so I... Please don't keep looking at me like that. You're making me nervous.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Mr. Skirving wanted to interview the provost personally, but he had to go to Birmingham. So I'm here.
Oh, you're very young to be assistant to the editor. You must be talented.
Well, there are only six of us on the staff, and I'm the only one left who can spell.
Sugar with your tea?
Please.
One lump or two?
May I see how big they are? Five, please.
Mr. Burden, you'll be horribly fat when you're 40.
No, I don't think so. None of my family's fat. We don't run to it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Are you interested in politics, Miss Hart?
Not very. Why?
Oh, you'll be smack in the middle of them with Provost Thompson going to Parliament.
You think he'll win the election,
Miss? Sure of it. Never saw them so strong for anybody. Of course, I rather wish he'd lose now.
Why?
So he'd stay on here. You see, I report all the local civic functions. It'd be nice to have something like you to look at.
Mr. Burden, you're an impudent young devil.
That, Miss Hart, I'm afraid, does run in the family. I try to curb it.
Well, whether Willie wins or loses, I'll be glad when the campaign's over. He's worn out. I hope he can rest a little after the big meeting tomorrow afternoon.
You have the most beautiful green eyes.
Mr. Burden, you're making me blush. Now stop it.
My name is Frank.
You can't go in here. Can I or can I not?
Maggie, what is it?
There's a person here, miss. She's asking for the provost, and she won't believe
it. Yes, ma'am, it's me. Mrs. Flanagan, now you know all about me. Mr. Provost, Your Honor.
Now, wait now. I'm not
the... Patsy, and I know what you said, McKellar, and I'm telling you it's all nonsense.
But I'm not...
Mrs. Flanagan, you're making a mistake.
Mrs. Flanagan, this is Mrs. Flanagan, that's Your Honor, dear. Now, I can't tell you.
I'm not his father. I'm
all... I have in mind. It's me, Patsy. If they kill him, I go to. Off to heaven among the blessed saints, and it'll be your fault, Mr. Provost.
I'm not the provost. There, got it out.
Well, why didn't you tell me?
He'll be home soon. Perhaps you wouldn't mind waiting down in the other room.
And... If you'll come this way.
And please don't worry. Nothing will happen to your Patsy. Whatever it is, I'm sure the provost can help.
Well, I wish I knew nothing would happen to the wee man. I wish I knew.
Poor dear, I gather her son's Patsy's in some kind of trouble with the police and she can't pay the fine.
Well, just some hot-headed young Irishman. The trouble's probably not serious.
You don't think they'll send him to prison? It covers a boy's whole life.
You know, it's been quite an experience meeting you. People in this part of the world don't warm up to their fellow creatures as you just did.
You warm up to your fellow creatures at pretty high speed yourself.
Well, I asked for that.
I'm sorry.
I do, as a matter of fact, anyhow. When you write for a newspaper, you should care for people.
You make newspaper work sound like a very noble calling.
Oh, I didn't mean to sound pompous.
You didn't. Do you sign your stories for the Advertiser, I'd like to read the things you write.
Would you?
Hmm?
Well, I'll make the interview with the provost the best thing I've ever written. And you read it, and you'll meet me on the street, and you'll say, Frank, give up writing.
I'll probably think it's wonderful and be terribly impressed.
Okay, am I late?
Elizabeth, come in. Mr. Burden, you know Mrs. Skirving. Mr. Burden's on your husband's paper, Elizabeth. How do you do?
How do you do? I'll wait outside for the provost. I'll keep Mrs. Flanagan company. Thanks for the tea, Miss Hart.
Really, Vicky, you can't have tea alone with some brass of a reporter.
Oh, no.
But one of the committee had stopped by. You're engaged to the provost of Vicky, my dear. You've got to be careful. You know how people talk.
Well, he was here when I came, Liz, but I couldn't very well push him off as I did Mrs. Flanagan. He's a gentleman.
Mrs. Flanagan? Who's that?
Well, she's here to see Willie about her son. He's being sent to prison for something. She's probably crying the whole story on Burden's shoulder this minute, too. Somehow he just has that kind of a shoulder.
Now, dry your eyes on this. That's a good girl.
Oh, he's 67 different varieties, but if you saw the eyes of them. No, they're going to kill him for the tax money. They're going to kill him.
No, they're not. Mr. Thompson will have your pup back by morning. They tell me he's a fine man. Oh, look, Mrs. Flanagan, the man coming in the front door. Is that your provost?
Oh, no, it's Willie McKellar from the town hall.
Honoria, what are you doing here? I tell you, if you've ordered the provost to be fair, furious, and that's a fact.
Have you been down to the courthouse now? Did you hear any news of me, Patsy?
Well, in a way, I did. He's lodging with me, Honoria.
He's with you? You're carding me.
Is that or not? He's in my lodgings at the town hall. You see, the police commissioner, he won't allow no mongrel dog near his bull terrier, Rosie. Her be the pedigreed dog and very affectionate toward male dogs, as you might say. So the commissioner, not wanting Patsy to go near the hall, he says to me, McKellar, he says, you're the town clerk, and I...
What?
Oh, here's the provost now.
There he is, himself. It's the provost. Your Honor, Your Honor.
What's going on in here? What is this?
It's me, Your Honor. This is Flanagan. This is Honoria Flanagan. Now, I've come about Miss Patsy. Now, Your Honor.
My good woman, you can't come bursting into my house like this. Please go home and write me a letter about whatever it is.
Write a letter while they're killing me, Patsy.
Now, hold on a minute, Honoria. I'll send the provost for you. Your Honor,
I'll see you in 5 minutes, McKellar. Give me time to get my breath. And you, sir? Do I know you?
I'm from the Advertiser. My name is Burton.
Oh, the interview. Just make yourself comfortable. I'll be ready in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Maggie, bring these gentlemen into the drawing room as soon as I've had my tea.
Well, if you'll all just wait a bit. The provost only wants a minute with his young lady first.
Hello, darling.
You're late.
I was laid by McKellar and some shouting old woman I don't know. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Willie. Ready for the interview?
Yes, the newspaper man's here. These things of Horace giving me a front-page splash. Thank him for me.
We thought it would help if people knew exactly where you stood before the big meeting tomorrow.
Oh, wait till you hear his speech. It's wonderful. Your tea, dear?
No, I must run. Horace is telephoning from Birmingham at 6. We'll see you at the meeting tomorrow. Good luck.
Thanks.
Why so glum? Hard day?
Maddening. I'm fighting a parliamentary election. I'm trying to represent all of Scotland. And at the same time, I have to keep going at silly little local trifles. I have to crawl when I want to fly.
Haven't you done pretty well, old man? You're provost of a thriving town and a favorite for Parliament. And you're only 38.
But you don't realize how badly I'm needed in a larger field of you. At a time when first-rate brains are needed nationally, I have to wrangle with the town council about whether the stoker at the town laundry is worth another tuppence, considering his lady has just had a third pair of twins.
Are they doing well?
Huh? Are who doing well?
The new twins.
Oh, really, my dear, I've no idea. I simply mentioned it to show you the kind of trifles that are taking up two-thirds of my time. Time I could be using as a statesman, leading Scotland.
Well, I hope you gave him the tuppence anyhow. Three pairs of twins.
Darling, you're like the town council. Sentimental about this or that little case, and not seeing that it's the totality that counts. In the founding and ruling of an efficient world state, the totality...
Now, don't you start your speeches at me, Willie Thompson. I've typed them and heard them and rehearsed you in them. Anyhow, you have my vote, totality or no totality.
Big pardon, Mr. Thompson. You said 5 minutes, and Mr. McKellar is waiting.
Come in, McKellar. And Maggie, you must send the reporter in, too.
Yes.
We'll prove us. He has quite a bundle for you. This is tinder for supplying new stair carpet for the courthouse. You'll have a mind the old one's a wheat in cash.
All right, just give me the lot.
Andy, here's all this about the dog, the £3 3s back taxes.
Haven't the police confiscated that dog yet? It's been up before council 3 times.
Well, they have, and then again they haven't.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, the police commissioner confiscated him, but I'm the one that's got him.
Huh?
You see, sir, Rosie, the police commissioner's bull terrier, she's a pedigree dog now, sir.
Hey, never mind, I'm sorry you've been bothered with it. Just tell the commissioner to have the dog destroyed in the morning.
But he says they cannot do that, sir.
Can't do it.
The law says confiscate, but it don't say nothing about it.
Well, we'll change the law then. Now, let's not waste any more time on dogs. Have you got the copies of the speech for tomorrow?
Excuse me.
Come in, Mr. Burden. Willie, this is Mr. Burden of the Advertiser.
Sit down, Burden. I'll be right with you.
Thank you.
These are busy days for me, you know.
You can't go
in. I wait no longer.
Now, what in the world is this?
No, then, Your Honor. I'm lifted out there forever, like patients on a monument. Well, for all I know, they're killing me, Patsy. This very...
Madam, I asked you before. Will you please leave my house? You really cannot come bursting in here like
this. Wait, Willie. This is Mrs. Flanagan. Her son, Patsy, is in trouble with the police here, and I'm sure you can help him. He's probably just a little wild. Perhaps if you talk to him...
You talk to him, he'll bark at you.
What?
Very well, madam. In one word, what is it you want? I'm very busy.
It's me, dog, Patsy. Your Honor, now, but we took away on account of the £3 tax money. Now, Your Honor,
the deal.
I'm very sorry. It's the law.
Well, where would an old apple woman be getting £3 and her a widow? But me, Patsy's no good to anybody else, and he's the soul out of me body.
Jordan, I'm glad you're here. Can you wonder at the state of Scottish politics when officials are constantly badgered with trifles like this?
It's not politics I'm talking about. It's me, Patsy.
Mrs. Flanagan, I know all about your dog. You'll have to pay the tax.
Oh, Willie, how much is the tax?
It's the law, Mrs. Flanagan. I'm sorry, but I can't help you. A good day. Now, Mr. Burden.
But they're going to kill him. Now, ask McKellar here.
Don't ask me nothing. I have nothing to do with it.
Doc McKellar, a fine friend you are.
Mrs. Flanagan, will you...
I ask you to stand up for me, and there you go, wibble-wobble.
I don't go wibble-wobble.
That's enough. You may go, McKellar.
Yes, sir.
Willie, how much is the fine?
Later, dear. Mrs. Flanagan, there's nothing I can do. As long as this town isn't able to collect taxes on dogs, you'll have...
Is the town enabled to? Is it legal to do that?
You will allow me to know more about the dog tax than you do, Mr. Burden, since I framed the law and passed it. If Mrs. Flanagan is so keen, she'll just have to save up and buy a new dog.
Oh,
Maggie!
A new dog! A new dog!
Mrs. Flanagan, I'll pay the fine. How much is it, Willie?
It's not the money, Victoria. It's the principle of the thing.
Did you call, sir?
Maggie, show this lady out, please. A good day, Mrs. Flanagan.
Oh, David, I'll not leave this house till you promise to save me.
Will you go? I'm losing my patience.
Come along, Mrs. Flanagan. I promise nobody's going to kill your dog. You go home and stop worrying, and I'll take you.
Well, at last, Mr. Burton. I'm sorry about all this.
Not at all.
Now, if you have your notebook, I'll give you the interview exactly as it is to appear.
Excuse me, sir, but oughtn't you to clear up this case first?
Huh? What case?
The dog.
Oh, really, Burden, I hardly call it a case. If a woman can't afford the dog tax, she shouldn't have a dog. Now then, during my term as provost, my object has been to promote the physical, moral, and financial well-being of every member of the community. Without... Mr. Burden, I am dictating.
Yes, look, Provost, about this dog, don't you think you...
I have a parliamentary campaign and the government of this community both on my hands at once. And you waste what little time I can spare you to talk about some bigger woman's stray mutt. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, the fundamental unit in any government is the individual citizen.
You make Mr. Thompson very angry.
Really, this noise... We must start with the individual citizen before...
Will you promise to save me, Patsy, or will you not?
Madam, leave my house at once.
Put me out if you dare, for I'm not...
Dare? Dare?
Let me let go of me, you big buffoon, you...
Will you go, you blasted tormentor? Oh, she's an old woman.
You throw me out, but I'll be
there. You go and steal.
Willie, you shouldn't have done that. Mrs. Flanagan, wait.
Oh, you incredible impudence. Sorry we've had all these interruptions, but... Now, where was I?
You were worrying about the individual citizen.
Oh, yes. It's only by realizing that each individual in the state is a living human being, each with his own intense perceptions of his own rights and his own wrongs, that... Mr. Burden, are you taking this down?
I am taking everything down, Mr. Thompson.
It's most important that exactly the right words reach the public before tomorrow's meeting. You understand?
Oh, yes, sir. The right words will be on the front page of the Advertiser. You can count on it, sir. You can definitely count on it.
curtain has fallen on the first act of the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Tonight we are bringing you Storm Over Patsy, starring Martha Scott, Eileen McMahon, and featuring Richard Widmark, Philip Tong, and Alfred Shirley. Now, before our second act begins, here speaking for United States Steel is the well-known reporter of the American Broadcasting Company, George Hicks.
Good evening. Tonight I'd like to tell you about steel producing in Pittsburgh. That's old stuff, you say. Wait a minute, I'm going to surprise you. I'm not going to talk about Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but Pittsburgh, California. For Pittsburgh in California is an important steel producing center. Like the U.S. steel plants in Gary, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, and Birmingham, Alabama, the Pittsburgh, California steel mills were founded to meet the needs of a growing industrial section. You see, back in 1910, a group of forward-looking businessmen joined together to establish a small foundry near San Francisco. This was the beginning of the now busy city of Pittsburgh, California. This was the beginning of steel manufacture in the far West, pioneered by men who had faith in the future of the West and who believed in its industrial growth. These men foresaw the need of Western-made steel to assist this growth, and their vision was rewarded. The small foundry expanded rapidly, and Western industry and Western steel have gone forward together ever since. Irving S. Olds, chairman of the board of U.S. Steel, says it in these words: "The United States Steel Corporation has for many years advocated continued industrial development of the far West. Its Pacific Coast policy has been to serve its customers in that area to the best of its ability. To do this, it has carried on a continual development program of its West Coast facilities, not only to keep pace with Pacific Coast needs, but in most cases to anticipate the potential demand." End of quote. Today, steelmaking in the West is an old story, but one of progress and development, providing this great and expanding part of our country a constantly increasing share of steel-producing facilities. The same kind of development which U.S. Steel has advocated and carried out in other industrial sections of our country.
We now pause for station identification. We continue with the second act of Storm Over Patsy, starring Martha Scott, Eileen McMahon, and featuring Richard Widmark, Philip Tong, and Alfred Shirley.
You'll remember a big political meeting was being held the next afternoon. That morning, the provost drove off around the counties near Beatty making speeches and collecting votes. So he didn't see the morning edition of the Advertiser. But the rest of us saw it. Every man and woman in Beatty paused in the middle of their breakfast porridge. There, large as life on the front page of the morning newspaper, was a picture of Honoria Flanagan. And under it, the whole shocking story of how the provost threw her out of his house and wouldn't give her back her wee dog. So the citizens of Beatty got themselves up a plan. That afternoon, they went to the big meeting in the old assembly hall and waited for the provost. He was late for the meeting, and when he got there, Mrs. Skirving, the editor's wife, rushed up to him as he walked onto the platform.
Willis, I thought you'd never get here. Have you seen the paper?
No, Miss Bitt, just got back. Been campaigning. Just in time, too.
Will you come make the speech? You don't know what's happened.
They're going to start.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen,
it is my pleasure to introduce to you a man who will soon represent Scotland in Parliament. But when that day comes, let us not forget that he is a Beatty man who has always had the people and the problems of Beatty close to his heart. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you our own Provost Thompson.
People of Beatty, during my term as Provost, my object has been to promote the physical, moral, and financial well-being of every citizen. Bow wow! During my term as Provost, my object...
Bow wow!
Where's your dog? You stole him. Why didn't you bring him along?
Please, ladies and gentlemen. During my term as Provost, my object...
The whole audience, yelping, growling, baying. I tried to warn him, but he hadn't seen the interview. The crowd was all ready to go. They were passing it around.
Let me see it, Lesbian. I didn't read it. Not beneath Provost's dignity to kick old woman out of his house.
That burden, that despicable Smith, to dare such a thing just because Ollie was in Birmingham and they couldn't stop it.
Listen to this. Tonight you will hear this bully making a great show of his humanitarian principles. They're not good enough for us, and neither is he.
Liz, oh, you know what this is doing to Willie's chances. The party's already got the wind out.
Oh, how could he do it? I know Willie lost his temper, but he was just overtired. He's not the kind of man burden pain.
We better go fetch Willie. He'll be cheering up. They went over to the town hall to see what's to be done.
I feel so guilty about not being there. I should have gone to the meeting no matter how many times I'd heard that speech. Come on, let's go over to Willie right away.
Oh, why did Burton do it? He didn't seem the sort to stab a man in the back.
Probably wanted to make a sensation for himself.
That's all. There he is. Burton, coming this way across the street. Turn your head away.
Miss Hart, please wait a minute.
How dare you show your face after what you've done? Come along, Vicky.
Miss Hart, wait. I'd like to come along if you're going to see the provost. I want to explain things. Please stop running.
I'm going to call the police this minute and have this man arrested for libel and for molesting us on the street. We'll see you tonight.
Oh, all right, Lizbeth. Now, Mr. Burton, please go. I don't want to talk to you.
You're angry with me?
Angry? Do you know what a dreadful thing you've done?
No.
You hurt and slander a fine man just because he lost his temper. Why did you do it? You said you had an explanation.
Well, I didn't think you'd need one. I thought you'd understand.
Understand that because of a little mongrel dog, you'd blast Mr. Thompson's career, his whole future.
Oh, now.
And chuck your own job as well? No, Mr. Burton, a vicious attack like yours doesn't come from such a small thing.
Oppression is never a small thing.
It wasn't Mrs. Flanagan you cared about. You wrote that story because you wanted a spot of limelight.
Oh.
Well, you've only hurt yourself. Willie will be elected anyway, while you'll be tossed out of town for a dangerous, unprincipled fool. Now, please go away.
All right, you have your explanation. Will you stop running? Cab.
Let go of my arm, Mr.
Cab. You called me names. I don't
like. Let me go. I'll
in
call
the cab, will you?
Will you let me
get
go?
Get in there. Drive us around the
square, please. Let me out of here.
Don't you please listen. Just give me a hearing.
If I must.
Well, I won't take long. Now, please sit back. When I was a boy, we lived at the foot of a steep hill. Every day, horses had to pull carts loaded with stones up that hill. The stones were too heavy. The horses would stick, unable to move. And then the drivers hit them. On their flanks, on their bellies, on their nostrils, and their eyes. And the horses would stagger on up somehow. Well, one day, I couldn't stick it any longer. I went up to one of the drivers, and I said, "Stop it." I was 14. He was a big man with a bull neck. I was terrified, but I said it. He just put his hand against my face, and he sent me spinning into the gutter. Well, I said to myself, you're only a little chap now, and you're scared. But when you grow up, you won't be scared. And whenever you see anything cruel, you won't stop to think of your own skin. You hit out. Well, that's all.
And you've done that ever since?
The best way I could.
You've never been scared?
Oh, often. I haven't got much breath, you know.
But you go on smashing up things and getting squashed yourself, as you will this time.
All the more reason for hitting out. It shows I have no personal motive.
Yes, but you can't go on that way. You'll wind up in jail someday.
They'll let me out again.
You're the strangest man. What if you found you'd made a mistake, that the man you hit wasn't the sort you thought him at all?
Look, you know, we oughtn't to be talking about this at all. The situation's too darn difficult.
I don't know what you mean.
Yes, you do.
Mr. Burton, you must...
You're right, I must. Look here, will you make me a promise?
Hmm?
Maybe I'm wrong about the provost, and maybe you're right. But if you change your mind, ever, if you discover one day that he's not the man you thought him, will you call me up and tell me? Victoria?
Yes, I will.
Whatever hour, day or night, promise me.
I promise. Now, please, I must go.
All right, I won't stay anymore. I'm a patient soul. I can wait.
I'm the publisher of the newspaper, and I've been arguing with him ever since you left the meeting. But it's just no use.
But they can't throw me overboard just like that, Horace. They can't do it.
But they don't dare back you for Parliament after all this fuss, old man. It's suicide. One of the London papers picked up the story, you see, and made quite a buzz about it. Oppression of the poor, all that sort of thing. Oh, I'll never forgive myself, Willie, it being my paper, but there you are. Oh, hello, Victoria.
Hello, Horace. Elizabeth.
Fantastic.
Parliament was in my hands, and it snatched away. Gone. Because some fool prints a piece of trash in a tuppenny provincial daily.
Oh, now I say, Willie.
Be quiet, Horace. Willie's perfectly right.
Ruined. That's the short of it, ruined.
No, Willie, it's not that bad.
Victoria, I can't afford, and the party can't afford, to have every schoolboy barking at me at every street corner.
Oh, dear.
It's a fiendishly clever plot. The scoundrel earned his pay well.
Pay? You don't think anyone paid Burden to write that?
Obviously. The opposition hired him to do it. Explains everything.
Willie, you're making a frightful mistake. Burden was sorry for Mrs. Flanagan, that's all. He hates cruelty, and what you did really was cruel. If you repeal the tax and return a dog, that's all he wants.
Lisbeth, you hear that? You hear that, Horace? Burden wasn't paid, oh no. He wrote that drop with tears running down his crafty face for a mutt he'd never laid eyes on. The world is full of people eager to toss over their jobs for a mongrel cur, I'm sure.
You don't understand at all, do you? You really don't know what Burden was talking about.
Willie, come here to the window.
Huh?
Look, out there. People are gathering.
Probably the same gang of hoodlums that broke up the meeting.
I don't think so. I think they're friendly. Can't quite make out faces yet, old man, but I'll keep trying.
Big pardon, sir. Mr. McKellar's here, that reporter gentleman.
Show them in, Maggie.
Burden here.
I had him brought here to sign a confession. It's our one chance.
Willie, what's happening to you?
Evening, brother. Here's Mr. Burden. We cannot hold him long, sir, without a legal charge against him.
I'll be responsible. You may go, McKellar.
Right, sir.
Now, Burden, sit down.
Burden, I'm deeply disappointed in you. Why did you do it? As your editor, I'm entitled to an explanation.
Well, Mr. Thompson behaved in a small matter like a fiend. I wanted to make sure he wouldn't have the chance to behave like that in a big one.
How much were you paid? We know who hired you. And what did you get? Cash or a job?
Have you gone batty?
Answer the question, you dirty little paid hack.
That. Mind the ladies present.
Burden, I mean business. Now, there's pen and paper over there. You'll write a letter recanting every word you wrote.
My, you've been seeing too many films, Provost. You begin to sound like a bad melodrama. Excuse me, Mrs. Skirving, you're blocking the door.
Elizabeth, bolt that door. You'll not leave this house till you've signed a confession. If I have to lock you in.
The lock's broken, Willie. I can't budge it.
No, no, come along, Burden, like a good fellow. Sit down and I'll tell you what to write. We'll have it in the morning edition. Well, did you hear? Pick up that pen.
No. I won't write anything, or sign anything, or recant anything. Now, it's your turn.
Burden, consider yourself sacked. And don't look for another job in this part of the country, for I'll have to see you don't find one.
You realize this means action for slander, Burden. Not civil action, criminal action.
And 10 years penal servitude and 20 strokes of the cat 3 times a day after meals. I'm bored with your threats. Every single word I wrote is true. And I shall go on happily shouting it from the housetops till I see justice done. Now, what do you think of that? Good night, all.
I say,
you'll risk the future of your country for a dog, will you? Well, you can't even save him, do you hear? The mutt dies tonight, law or no law. I'll kill it myself, and then I'll get you.
Look, the crowd's getting large out there.
Vicky, get the police commissioner on the phone for me, please. I want the dog destroyed at once.
Willie, you can't mean it. What's happened to you? I don't know you anymore.
Please do as I ask, Victoria.
No, Willie, I won't.
I see. When I really need you, you refuse to lift a finger to help me.
I'd be helping a tyrant. I'm glad the whole silly thing happened. It's shown me the kind of man you are. Give you a little power and you go mad drunk on it. Try to take your power away and you're a monster. When I think you almost got to Parliament.
So you turn against me openly.
Willie, the crowd's getting enormous. It's spread from the square, clear up to the porch steps.
Do come and show yourself, old man. I'm sure they're friendly.
Well, I don't know. Maybe another trick of Burden.
No, it can't be, old chap. There are men. See, there's George McFarlane, Jock White, and look, over there, there's McKellar. Now step out and say a few words, sharp and to the point.
Willie, I wouldn't...
Now stand aside, Victoria. The people out there are loyal. They haven't turned against me as others have. Will you help me with these doors, Horace?
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hardly know how to thank you for the loyal impulse that has led you here.
All right, everybody, set the dogs on it. Get out of there.
Corner. He's messing up the rug.
Go to McKellar's lodging, so be quiet, Mrs. Flanagan. You better come in with me. That's your box. It's to wake the dead if I try to take him. He doesn't know me.
Oh, sure. It'll be the fine tizzy old McKellar will be into when he wakes in the morning and he finds the wee man gone. Yeah. Oh, he'll have to see the eyes popping out of his bald head when he sees the empty box. Oh, I wish.
Be quiet. He wakes up while we're at it, he'll be the devil to rouse.
Patsy, me loving darling, come to your mother. That's the dear boy.
Yet, put your hand over his mouth or he'll give us away. Come on, hurry up. Let's get out before the commissioner gets
here. Oh, and I think, Mr. Burden, that the dear wee soul would maybe be a dead corpse this minute if it wasn't for you.
What was that?
Honoria, what are you doing in the town hall at midnight?
Oh, my. Hello, McKellar.
Jock McKellar, you wear the same kind of nightshirt my dad used to wear.
Come along, Mrs. Flanagan, while there's still time.
Where are you going with that dog?
I'm sure we're taking him home where he belongs.
You cannot take the patsy. It's town property. I'm responsible for it.
Good night, McKellar.
You've never taken such fine care of me, patsy. Mr. McKellar, dear, I'm beholden.
But you... Come back now. The patsy's town property. You know, Mr. Burden, it's a terrible mean advantage you're taking of the law. You know, I can chase you in my nightshirt.
The curtain has fallen on the second act of the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Tonight we are bringing you Storm Over Patsy, starring Martha Scott, Aline McMahon, and featuring Richard Widmark, Philip Tong, and Alfred Shirley. Now, before our third act begins, here again for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Today, nearly every ship that sails under the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge and every returning plane that flies over it bears precious cargo. It's living cargo, America's young men returning to civilian life. And somehow that magnificent bridge, the world's largest, is a kind of symbol of the way this nation does things. It was built by other men who were not afraid to accept challenges, and for such men there will always be opportunity. Helping such men to build the West has been the privilege of Columbia Steel Company, just as other members of the United States Steel family have helped to develop other sections of our country. For Columbia Steel Company is a completely integrated steel manufacturing unit, the first and for many years the only one west of the Rocky Mountains. It includes mines and a blast furnace in Utah, and steel mills and foundries at Torrance and Pittsburgh, California, and warehouses at Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. From these plants has come steel for Boulder and Shasta Dams and Grand Coulee and the other gigantic irrigation projects that will help to add thousands of acres of fertile farmland to the West. Columbia Steel Company supplies wire rope for the great Pacific Coast lumber industry and steel fencing for the West Coast farmer. Oil is drilled and gold is mined efficiently with modern tools of steel produced by Columbia. But Columbia knows that other bays will be crossed by bridges of steel, that bigger dams will be built, that mines will go deeper, and more cars and planes will soon be thirsty for oil from deeper wells. And that means the business of building America, the biggest business in the world, will go on as always. To help provide the steel for that building, Columbia is modernizing and improving its facilities. The new installations will furnish the far West with 325,000 tons of the finest kind of sheet steel and tin plate each year. This means jobs and opportunities, and it means that Columbia will continue to do its part in providing the Pacific Coast with the steel it needs for growth and prosperity.
We continue with the third act of Storm Over Patsy, starring Martha Scott and Aline McMahon, and featuring Richard Widmark, Philip Tong, and Alfred Shirley.
By this time, your mind has steeped the town with him over the affair of the Patsy. We've not had such a scandal since the half-witted Mac Morrissey boy set fire to the old Presbyterian Kirk. But the Patsy scandal reached a high mark a few days after, when everybody went down to see the trial of Frank Burden, accused of stealing from the town of Bay a piece of property named Patsy. Honoria Flanagan got there early, though she didn't have Patsy with her. It had him subpoenaed, you see, as a stolen object. I was walking the police commissioner's dog, Rosie, when I saw Honoria coming up the courthouse road.
Good morning, Mr. McKellar.
Good morning.
Well, look there. You got yourself a wee dog of your own, did you now, McKenna?
Oh, no. This is the police commissioner's Rosie, Honoria. I offered to take her for an airing.
Well, I thought I saw the little thing somewhere. No, Mr. McKellar. I'm sure I've seen this dog around somewhere recent, and I can't remember where.
Well, she don't get around much, Rosie, don't her? Her be the pedigree dog and all. The chief don't let her run free, you know. Well, and how are you, Honoria? Bearing up?
Well, I'm bearing up fine as soon as I get my shoes off. Oh, it's a fine thing to have stylish shoes, but they should be broke in proper before you put them on your bunions. There. Oh, what a relief.
Hey, you look geese, Bruce. I never saw you so well turned out, Honoria. Quite the lady.
What now, Mr. McKenna?
They say Burton took up a collection for you to pay the tax and all.
Aye, the dear man's a blessed angel, straight from heaven that he is.
They're saying he collected enough to buy a dozen dogs for you, if you mind to. I heard it put at 4 figures.
I'm not complaining.
You'll be minding about rainy days now. You'll go be throwing it all away
McKenna,
on duty and that was...
Please, preserve us. Do you know where I saw that dog? Dear Lord in heaven, that's what comes of not locking him in his basket.
What is it, Honoria?
The first night he was home, I missed him around midnight. And you'll not believe it, McKenna, when I tell you he didn't come home all night. And when he did come home, just as he was getting me breakfast, you'll not believe who he had with him. Rosie there.
No. I'll believe it, Honoria. I always told the commissioner his Rosie was unaffectionate, as you might see for a pedigree lady.
There's the man, Burden, going into the courthouse. Wave to him, Mr. McKellar. Oh, the poor man. I hope he's not worrying himself too much. I'm going in and see how he is.
Usher, is this right for the burglary trial?
Aye. What's your business?
I'm the burglar.
Oh, do you tell me that now? They're not what they was, burglars. Go into the courtroom, that door on the right. The clerk will tell you what it is.
Plenty of time. I don't have to surrender the bail till 10. It's only quarter of.
Oh, I saw you come in, Mr. Burden. And how are you this terrible day?
Fine. And how's Patsy?
He's there bursting out of his skin with good health and good living. It's a grand, beautiful bit of writing you did for him, man, dear. I've had it framed.
Well, I'm glad somebody liked it.
It's up on the wall between His Holiness and the colored enlargement of poor Flanagan at Walls.
Prisoner, get along in now. Court's opening.
Have you a clever lawyer now to speak up for you?
Oh, I have. Mr. Menzies, a king's counsel, no less.
Well, so won't you be charging the hair off your head?
Oh, I don't pay. The bills are paid by the FSFFF.
Of which?
The Federation of Friends of the Feathered, Four-Footed, and Furry. Come on, Mr. Flanagan, in we go. Mustn't miss the trial. Hello, Mr. Menzies. Lovely day for a trial, isn't it? I hope you're in a defending mood.
Mr. Bowden, I'll defend you better if you'll take this trial a little more seriously.
I'll try.
Court in session. His Honor, Judge.
You may read the charge, clerk.
Yes, my lord. People of the county of Berkey versus Francis. It is charged that you, Francis Burton, did force illegal entry into the lodgings of Joseph James McKellar on the night of September 25th. And did steal from said lodging a small yellow mongrel answering to the name of Patrick, otherwise Patsy, previously the property of Honoria Flanagan. At the time of the theft, the property of the town of Berkey. And it did convey said dog to place or places unknown.
Prisoner, do you understand the charge?
I'm trying to, my lord.
You wish to hear it again?
Oh, Lord, no.
In future, yes or no will suffice. You plead guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty, my lord.
Hey, Mr. That's a fool of the innocent.
Quiet in the court.
Mr. Prosecutor, you may begin.
My lord, I call Joseph McKellar to the stand.
Joseph McKellar! Hold up your right hand. Do you swear before him that you got to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Aye. Now, Mr. McKellar, on the 24th of September, you accepted from the police commissioner custody of a small yellow mongrel answering to the name of Patsy? Aye. Why? I beg your lordship's pardon.
I said why. Why should the town clerk have custody of the object any more than the town sanitary engineer or the town fire chief? If the chief constable confiscated it, why didn't he keep it?
Oh, I can explain that, my lord. You see, the chief has a brindle bull terrier called Rosie, a pedigree dog and a female. And when Pat...
I see. Go on, Mr. Prosecutor.
Now, on the evening of the 25th, when you retired, the dog was still in your custody, McKellar.
Aye.
And when you arose the next morning, the dog was gone. Is that correct?
It's correct that Patsy was gone when he arose the next morning.
Now, had anybody seen the dog in your lodgings on the 25th?
Well, Mr. Belden...
Ah, That is all, my lord.
Mr. Menzies, you may cross-examine the witness.
Now, McKellar, your lodgings are in the town hall, so it's quite easy for anyone to break into them, is it not?
Aye.
So that anyone might have gained access to your lodgings and taken the dog, might they not?
Anyone might have, but I did it.
Mr. Burke.
Well, I did. I went up and I got Patsy and took her home. I told you all that, remember?
Mr. Menzies, please speak to your client. My lord, I'm sick to death of speaking to him. You may stand down, McKellar. My lord, I call Mrs. Horace Skirving to the stand.
Mrs. Horace Skirving. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
Now, Mrs. Skirving, on the evening of the 25th, you were at the home of Provost Thompson. Just what happened there?
I'll tell you what happened. Verdon instigated an animal riot and then went out and stole that dog. And why did he? Because he hated Mr. Thompson. And why did he? Because he's in love with Vicky Hart, who's engaged to Mr. Thompson. And Verdon only hounded Thompson out of Vicky. So he
My lord, I object.
So do I. I'm on trial as a dog thief, and it isn't even her dog.
Mr. Verdon, will you be quiet?
Well, I have to defend my good name, don't I?
Prisoner, Mr. Menzies, your inability to control your client does you little credit as a king's counsel.
Your lordship will recognize that my client is a very eccentric man.
What?
Added to which, your lordship's opinion of my poor capabilities and my client's obvious agreement with your lordship's opinion leaves me no choice but to withdraw from the case. Good morning.
Touchy, wasn't he?
Mr. Burton, do you wish me to adjourn court so you may find other counsel?
No, go right ahead. I'm enjoying it. I'll just represent myself.
Very well. I shall adjourn for an hour to give you time to prepare a defense.
Court adjourn till 12 o'clock. This way out, please. I'm glad he made the adjournment, Honoria. I didn't have time before to finish what I was going to say.
Mr. McKellar, you did yourself proud. Sitting up there, giving it to him.
About the collection money, Honoria, you'll know before it all away on beauty parlors and the like now. Beauty's only skin deep, you know.
Not that deep at my age.
Why, it's just the right age. I've no taste for green apples, Michelle. You're a bunny kind of buxom, isn't he? And there's no harm in telling you.
Stop now, Jack McKellar. I'm blushes all over me if you could only see.
You make a fine wife for a man, I have no doubt. Have you thought about marrying again, Honoria?
No, what would the provost be saying in his class talking this way to Mrs. Flanagan, the troublesome biddy?
He's not the provost anymore. The party made him resign, Honoria.
Did they now? When was this?
After the Friday dog uprising.
Oh, so he's not the provost anymore. Poor soul. Where do you suppose he is, McKellar? Why do you suppose... What do you suppose he's doing that he didn't come to the trial?
Willie, please say what you came to say and then go. I only just got back from the country and I'm very tired.
Well, I've been trying to see you since that incident Friday. Not to put too fine a point on it, Victoria, I want you to forgive me for running off and leaving you with all those dogs.
Oh, I forgive you cheerfully, Willie. But I'm still not going to marry you.
Now, look here, Victoria.
I'm sorry, Willie, but that's final. Please, let's not argue about it anymore.
What's behind all this? Is it that scoundrel Burton? He's been making love to you behind my back, hasn't he?
No. If it's any comfort to you, I called him a dozen times in the country, and he wouldn't even come to the telephone.
Oh, too bad. You could have spent a nice, long courtship visiting him in jail.
Jail?
You'll find Mr. Humanitarian is on trial this minute for theft of county property.
Really? How? What happened?
And I still have some influence in this town. He stole that dog, and the prosecutor promised me 90 days would be the least he'd... Victoria, come back here! You'll not interfere with that trial! Victoria!
Proceed, Mr. Prosecutor.
And so, my lord, Mr. McCullough, the veterinary, is prepared to classify the stolen object and assess its value. Mr. McCullough, have you examined this dog?
I have. Now, Patsy.
I can't quite see the dog properly. Mr. McCullough, kindly lift the object to the witness stand.
Oh, just touch your ears, Patsy. Don't listen to him, darling.
Mr. McCullough. As an expert on this subject, will you kindly testify as to your findings?
Well, sir, he's a proper bonanza, that dog. Aye, Patsy. From his rump to his shoulders, he's a taste of the sheepdog. He has the muzzle of a setter, the ears of a cocker spaniel, and the fine soldier tail of a Pomeranian. His legs of a retriever and the sad, noble eyes of a poodle. In short, my lord, he's not so much dog as the epitome of all the dogs that ever ran round this earth on 4 feet.
Extraordinary. And what would you say he was worth?
Well, Patsy, me buck, what do you think? Oh, say, 6 and 8 pence.
Madam, assure yourself. Then the dog was not stolen for his money value.
He was not, my lord. You can make your mind easy on that.
Your witness, Mr. Burton.
Hmm? Oh, thanks. I don't want him.
You may stand down.
And good riddance, Your Honor. 6 and 8 pence.
It's your next word, madam. You'll leave this court. Your next witness, Mr. Prosecutor.
I call Honoria Flanagan to the stand.
Honoria Flanagan. Do you swear to tell the whole truth, the truth, nothing but the truth?
Sure. Don't touch me, darling. Mother's busy.
Now, Mrs. Flanagan, it is true, is it not, that the accused raised a subscription for you?
Oh, he did, and may the good Lord bless him and long life to his children.
How much did the money come to?
Oh, sure, now you won't be making me tell you that. Good old McKellar sitting there listening with all the ears of him.
How much?
Oh, well, £327.09.06 and I'll wager the halfpenny came from McKellar.
Now, how much of that sum did you give Mr. Burton?
Mr. Burton? Did I dream of offering him a penny and him a gentleman?
Well, if you didn't give him money, just why do you ask us to believe that he stole the dog for you? Just because he likes dogs?
Well, sure, you can read it. It's all in the paper. Look, Mr. Thompson's not fit to be provost. He don't like dogs. There's Miss Hart, the provost young lady, coming in the door. Just ask her if you don't believe me. She heard Burden tell the provost he can't go about killing little dogs.
Your witness, Mr. Burden.
Run along, Mrs. Flanagan, and thanks for calling me a gentleman.
Sure, you're a blessed saint. That'll do.
Now, Mr. Burden, will you be good enough to address the court in your own defense?
I don't think I'll bother, my lord, thanks.
You have no defense?
None the court would understand, my lord.
They would understand.
Silence!
Tell them you weren't going to see a poor woman persecuted and not get back for her.
Young lady, do you wish to give evidence?
Yes. If the prisoner won't defend himself,
my lord, if the court please, I'll speak in my own defense.
Proceed.
Well, as I understand it, I am accused of stealing this dog.
To put it crudely, you are.
Well, I don't know anything about law, but it seems to me that before you can steal a dog from someone, it has to belong to that someone.
It has to... will you say that again?
Does the county of Bakey own the dog Patsy? And if not, how can I steal Patsy from it?
Mr. Prosecutor, can the corporation of Bakey prove ownership of this object?
Well, your lordship remembers the dog was handed over to the town clerk of Bakey.
But who had the right to hand it over to anybody? It's Mrs. Flanagan's dog. It's always been Mrs. Flanagan's dog.
But, my lord, the dog was confiscated under Bylaw 164.
But you can't confiscate property under bylaw.
That's quite true. Well, Mr. Prosecutor?
But your lordship, the owner had failed to pay her tax on the dog.
But, sir, the tax is illegal, haven't they told you? Local authorities can't impose indirect taxation.
Mr. Prosecutor, is this true?
Well, my lord,
Mr. Prosecutor, court is recessed for 5 minutes to enable me to check this point. Accused and witnesses will remain in court.
Mr. Burton, wait. Could I speak to you? You're staring again.
Just the convict taking his last look at the splendors of nature before he's locked up.
Then why didn't he have a look at the splendors of nature before?
Before?
The splendors of nature wrote and telephoned all weekend. The splendors of nature wired and left messages.
Oh, good Lord, they must be at my flat. I haven't been there. I'm most terribly sorry.
Listen, if the judge doesn't acquit you when he comes back, will you speak up for yourself? Tell them about the horses on the hill and about the vow you made.
You suppose I tell that to all these people?
They'd understand.
Women. You can tell that sort of thing once in a lifetime, Victoria, to one human being. And then get a red face whenever you think of it.
You mean...
to the woman one loves. Well, there's the judge. I'd better get back.
Frank, wait. You can't say things like that and then run away.
Oh,
of course. Francis Burden, I find you not guilty. And I wish to say I consider a deliberate attempt has been made to mislead the court.
Thank you, my lord.
Don't be impertinent. Court is adjourned.
Oh, he's free, is it? May the Lord bless your honor and your ladyship. If so, there be such a lucky woman as to be wed to your holiness.
This way, or please.
Mm-hmm. Vicky!
Willie, if you're here when that crowd comes out, they'll murder you. Now be a good fellow and go away somewhere.
Vicky, I demand that you forgive me. I'll not be cast aside like
this. Now, what do you mean by bawling and yelling at this lady? Get out.
Who do you think you're talking to?
I'm talking to a pompous, empty-headed noise. Now, I'll count three before I punch your face in. One, two...
You've wrecked my career and my home. You're a sneak in the grass.
And you're a carbuncle on the public's neck.
You hear from my lawyer for this...
And you hear from the FFFFFs.
Well, there goes Willie.
I didn't dream, did I? You did get in the sack.
You remember I promised to call you if I found out I was wrong about him? Well, I've been calling all week.
Oh, bless you. Vicky, if you'd married him, I'd have shot myself. Victoria, darling.
Oh, Frank, not here.
Oh, Lord, here they all come.
Come on, run.
The rate that dog's been running my life, he'll probably want to come along on a honeymoon.
Oh, we can't have that.
But we'll make it up to him. Boy or girl, we'll name the first one Patsy.
And here again is Lawrence Langner to tell you about next week's Theater Guild play to be presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Mr. Langner.
Thank you, Miss Scott and Miss McMahon, Mr. Widmark, Mr. Tongs, Mr. Shirley, and the rest of the cast of Storm Over Patsy. And thank you, Patsy, for a flawless performance. And now to tell you about next week's play. You see, there'll be two of them. Two thrilling melodramas, both by Eugene O'Neill, whose Our Wilderness you heard some weeks ago at this hour. They are The Emperor Jones and Where the Cross is Made. Next Sunday, the famous Negro actor, Canada Lee, will play the Emperor Jones. Walter Houston will be the father in Where the Cross is Made and will also play an important part in The Emperor Jones. The Emperor Jones was first seen in New York at the famous Provincetown Playhouse. I was there the opening night, and I remember it well, because it was preceded by a one-act play written by me. When the papers came out the next day, the critics said that Eugene O'Neill had written one of the greatest plays of our time. I looked eagerly through the newspapers to see what they had to say about my play, and I found the following written at the very bottom of most of the notices. There was also a one-act play by Lawrence Langner. No comment.
Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next week at the same time when we will bring you The Emperor Jones and Where the Cross is Made, two great plays by America's greatest dramatist, Eugene O'Neill. If you'd like a program with program notes and cast lists of tonight's Theater Guild on the air, prepared for each broadcast with information about the play and the players, simply address the United States Steel Corporation, Radio Department, 71 Broadway, New York, 17, New York. The staff for the Theater Guild on the Air includes Homer Fickett, director, George Condolph, producer, and Armina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music for tonight's play was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. The play was adapted for radio by Helene Hahn. Patsy was played by an actor appropriately named Brad Barker. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. I'd like to tell you about some of the forthcoming plays in this series. 2 weeks from tonight, you'll hear the charming film star Miss Joan Fontaine in the romantic comedy drama Pride and Prejudice. Later in the series, Alfred Lunt will appear in Sidney Howard's comedy drama Ned McCobb's Daughter. Other plays scheduled are dramas by Sidney Howard as Hen Behrman and George Bernard Shaw.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.